All right, real quick. The government first started tracking working hours in 1890. The average full-time manufacturing employee clocked in 100 hours a week. In the mid-19th century, it was common for workers to work 70 hours in a six-day work week. But then Henry Ford, in 1926, standardized the five-day work week with 40 hours. And Henry Ford was also an anti-Semite, Nazi lover, and Hitler had his picture in his office. And that's common knowledge. Coming out his podcast, just a man doing the best he can with what he got. And the American work landscape has always been a funny one. During critical times and pivotal times, it changes. The Great Depression made it so that the average 5 days a week, 40 hours a week workday could be possible. You know, after that, people's like, look, man, I need more time. I'm working too hard. People was dying. Like, the average life expectancy during that time was like 50, 55. Like, folks was dying. It was literally working themselves to death. Something had to change. The way Americans were working was untenable. Had to change, right? And that's what happened in 2019. The landscape of work in America forever changed. Like, around the world, but mainly these first world countries. Like, we've always worked on the principle of 40 hours a week, come to the office. You got to come to the office. Somebody has to oversee you, because if they don't oversee you, then you're not as productive. Lack of productivity means lack of money. So to maximize your time, we all got to come to this one building and work together to get stuff done. And there is something to be said about collaborating together, like-minded individuals, brainstorming, coming together and getting stuff done. That is a true thing. But with modern technology and the inventions of Zoom, Microsoft Teams, and the whole old 365 suite and apps, you still can brainstorm. Like, me and Classics Jones wrote a song together, and we used the collaborate feature on Notepad on our iPhones, and we actually could see each other typing out stuff and correcting stuff in real time, bro. Technology has made it so we can collaborate. We don't have to be in each other's faces all the damn time. There is a paradigm shift to how we do work. And this is really, really, really hitting America hard, because America is damn near a post-manufacturing society. Like, we don't really make anything in America anymore. Most of our jobs are sales, marketing, media, a lot of stuff that you don't need to be in an office to do. Like, dead ass, a lot of stuff is even outsourced. A lot of the graphics, a lot of the editing, it's outsourced. People do it at home. Like, I do editing part-time for podcasts and video editing. People give me the files via Dropbox. I take the files, I edit them, I send them back. I don't have to go to the office to edit those. And a lot of jobs, you don't need to be there. And that's what COVID exposed in 2019. Like, a lot of the jobs, in order to make this money, was like, look, you guys go home and work so we can make this money. And now COVID is over. And those same workers are like, yo, wait. Why do I need to go back to the office? I was doing just fine here now. And the dirty secret is productivity did not slow down when all these workers went home. In some cases, productivity went up. Dead ass. Studies have shown that people who work from home typically work more hours. Right? And that's kind of the reason why I like actually going in to the office, me personally. I like going into the office because I need separation. Like, I do work stuff at the office. I do home stuff at home. Like, when I leave the job, I shut off. I don't bring my work home with me. And when I'm home, I do home stuff. You know? It's a separation. I can do that. But a lot of people, when they work from home, they just typically just keep on working and working, working, working. Now, home does have the flexibility so you can do stuff. Like, I never forget a coworker of mine at the new job I'm at. It's like the best thing about working at home is I can take the chicken out. And that was like the biggest, like, I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. Think about it. You don't have to worry about, like, did the kids take the chicken out to defrost for dinner? If you think about it, boom, you can do it. In between your work, man, you can do a load of clothes. You know, on your smoke break, you can go out there and pick up your kids. There's a lot of flexibility with working from home. It makes it convenient for the worker. And a lot of folks ain't going to give that up, though. They really ain't. They're not going to give that up. But on the flip side, there's a hidden economy that is suffering because of this. I've noticed at my job, a lot of the people work remotely. A lot of them. I do a lot of stuff with remote workers. And in turn, a lot of the cafes, the restaurants around the area have closed down. Like, lunch was their big time to make money. And because nobody is there now, they have to shut down. Not to mention, these companies are still paying rent at these buildings nobody's in. Like, they've signed long-term leases, and now a lot of their workforce is not at home, and a lot of these places are just ghost towns. They have them. They're just there. But it's hard to say, hey, come back to work right now. And people are like, why? But I read a story about the plans that companies have in 2024. And let me read it to you. The debate whether or not to return to the office is far from settled. And yet the push to get employees back to the office is getting more aggressive. Goldman Sachs wants employees in 5 days a week. A whopping 90% of companies plan to implement return to office policies by the end of 2024. Resume Builder, which surveyed 1,000 company leaders, nearly 30% say companies will threaten to fire employees who don't comply with in-office requirements. Only 2% of business leaders said their companies never plan to require employees to work in person. And this is really going to depend on what do you do. If you are an engineer, 9 out of 10, that threat of not coming in the office and firing you is not going to happen. There's a shortage of engineers, people who do research and development. So good luck trying to convince those people to come in. It's really going to depend on how specialized your job is. It's easier for executives to hold on to the old notion that people are really working if they can see them down the hall. The message I hear from executives is, we never intended for the world to change this dramatically and the office to just go away. Then there's the popular argument that people are less connected to the company and to their peers without the office, which is bad news for employee engagement and retention. Now, let me stop right here for a second, because you see where this is going. There's this notion that floated around in the 90s and the 2000s that your company was family. We're all family. We're getting together. You got to be engaged with the company. And that was just bullshit. I'm just going to be honest with you, man. The company doesn't care about you. You're not family. You're not related. And when you're not productive, they're going to get rid of your ass. And that's the bottom line. What is your productivity? What do you bring to the company? I have a thing where I don't bring anything personal to work. I do not. Because when you fire my ass, it's going to be light for me. I'm just coming in with my backpack and I'm walking out with that. But a lot of companies want you to give to the company and, you know, like, have loyalty to the company when the loyalty is not given back. And a lot of these workers now just don't have loyalty to companies. For all intents and purposes, a lot of people are just mercenaries out here, dude. They're jumping around from job to job, which I think you should do. Every once in a while, you need to check your value on the marketplace and you can find a better job. Get the hell out. Mercenary style. It's the people in charge, man. But let's keep on going. CEOs are also justifying their stance with the belief, not facts, not data, but with the belief that workers are more productive in the office. And once again, there is something about being like collaborative and learning from people and being mentored in person. So I definitely get that. But I really think that's for like young employees. Like if you're straight out of college, yeah, you need to go to the office because you need some mentorship and you need to see how things swing. It's hard to like learn stuff online when you ain't never been in a job. So I do think the office has a place, but you know, everybody, like if you're a senior person, you've been working at the same job or you've been in the workforce for like 20 years. Yeah, man, I think working from home is for you. But let me continue with the story. Yet research has failed to draw definitive conclusions about remote workers' productivity. In the U.S., employees' productivity rose by 4.4% in 2020 and 2.2% in 2021. So what is the solution to this and what they think is going to happen? Well, here we go. 5 days a week in the office is dead. Even the large firms on Wall Street and Silicon Valley consider a full return to office and workplace, but workplace experts agree that most organizations will stick with the post-pandemic norm of spending 2 days to 3 days a week in the office. I think the concept of spending 5 days a week in the office is dead, says Elliot. That top-down, one-size-fits-all approach can lead to a lot of resentment among workers. And here's the thing, right? Just like the Great Recession caused a workplace shift, and we went from 70 hours down to 40 hours, I truly believe the next shift is the 3-day work week. Well, to be specific, the 3-day work at home, 2 days, I'm sorry, the 2-day work at home and the 3-day in the office shift. And let me just say, though, this is going to be for people of privilege. Like a lot of these jobs, though, even to work remotely was a privilege and a flex. As y'all remember, those essential workers, they had no choice. Like if you're doing pest control, you can't choose to work remotely. If you are working in a restaurant, you cannot choose to work remotely. If you're in a service industry or the hospitality industry, you had to be there, right? We call them folks essential. We really did them wrong. We didn't give them folks no extra healthcare. We didn't give them no benefits. We gave PPP loans out to companies, but we didn't give all them essential workers no money. We just sent them folks out to die and was like, yeah, thank you guys. Y'all heroes. So I would say working remote is a flex. But I think for a lot of these companies and a lot of these workers, the compromise is going to be, bro, 3 days on, 2 days in the office. Because it's untenable, bro. It really is untenable. And you see this, man, like a lot of CEOs. And so the notion that CEOs don't do anything is wrong. Like CEOs do a lot. But a lot of CEO work is done in the background and literally just making speeches. Okay, you know, let me not say that because I'm not CEO, right? And one thing this story did not point out, and I think it's really a motivating factor, is once again that rent. Like, I think the next big real estate collapse is going to be all these goddamn office buildings. As people start to downsize and realize they don't need these office spaces and the elaborate setups. Like, once again, that's another economy y'all don't think about. Most of the office furniture isn't bought, it's rented. So that's another company that's going to lose money. The renovator's going to lose money because a lot of these office buildings have to be good. New fiber optic cables need to be put in there for internet service and everything. That's another industry that's going to suffer as we go to the cloud. Like, a lot of things is connected to the office. And I'm pretty sure that's really the underlying theme. But yeah, man, I think it's over for the 5-day work week. I agree with this. Folks ain't going back to that. But once again, being able to work remote, yeah, kind of a flex. Man, since I've been back to America, a lot of stuff is just super weird to me. And I ask myself, why do we do it? Why are we doing this? Why are we continuing to do this? And the answer is usually, well, this is our history. This is our culture. And to that, I say, you can stop. And that old culture is good. saying this is our culture is not good enough. If the logics of the past do not like make sense today, let's stop it. It needs to be stopped. You can't keep on saying, well, that's how we always do. Is this how you're going to do it now? No, no, bruh. You're going to have to change stuff. Like every so often, man, stuff has to change. And when you super ultra conservative to the point that you don't look at the new living conditions and the paradigms that's happening now, and you don't adjust, you end up just keeping stupid stuff that makes no sense now. And what is one of them things that makes no damn sense that we're doing right now? Tipping. Why are we still tipping in America? This has to stop. The notion that I gotta subsidize your workers because you don't want to pay them for bringing out my chicken sandwich is dumb. It's dumb as hell, man. And all jobs in customer service is really based on the customer liking you. But imagine at your job, if your income was tied to if the person that you were serving really liked you. That is impossible, bro. Like, I never forget this story my mom told me. My mom was working her way through college, and she took a job at a restaurant, Poncho's, matter of fact, in West Memphis, Mexican restaurant, five cheese dip. She worked at Poncho's. She said a party of like 30 to 40 people came in, and she busted her ass off by herself, took care of all those people, and as a joke, they left her a penny tip. As a joke. My mom, three kids, working hard, got a penny. Makes no goddamn sense and never have. And then y'all had the nerve to ask why people didn't come back after COVID till they waiting and serving jobs. Y'all was really concerned. Well, nobody's going to go steal my food. Well, that's because they had to come back to $2.15 an hour. And out of that $2.15 an hour, they got to pay Social Security and Medicare and federal taxes. So actually, they're probably getting like, what, 75 cents an hour, baby? So I went and did some research. Where did tipping come from in America? And surprise, surprise, came from slavery. Yep. The origins of tipping in America are racist as hell, as much stuff is in America. And as we try to deal with our history, we got to start admitting why we do the things we do and why we need to stop. Like, seriously, this is one of them things when I say this right now, a lot of folks are going to get triggered and be like, well, what are you saying, Marcus? America's not great and people don't want to pay. Like, no, it is what it is. This is the history. We should change it. Once again, it's a culture. Doesn't mean it works today. We need to change it. It was racist as hell. It's an offshoot of slavery. Now, did it start in America? No. It's an offshoot from the aristocrats in England in the 1800s. Like the Americans that were going over to England and coming back, pretending like they were cultured. You know? What does tipping stand for? To ensure prompt service. But y'all didn't know tip was an acronym. That's right. To ensure prompt service. So what the aristocrats would do, just to make sure the beer came out quicker and the food came out quicker, they'd give a little bit something, grease the handshake, like, look, man, here you go. We got a little something for you, buddy. Make sure that that salmon comes out quick. Or salmon, depending on what part you're at. I'm from the South, so I say salmon, but you know, it's salmon, whatever you want to say. That's where tipping came from in Europe. Now, here's the thing, though. Tipping was actually discussed in America as being an offshoot of the aristocracy in England. Like, we were so anti-against that. We was like, nah, man, that's an offshoot. We are democracy. We don't like that until the slaves were freed. Yep. Like most bullshit, it traced back to racism and slavery. After slavery, you had a bunch of free slaves. So instead of paying them folks wages, what they did was they made them folks live entirely off of tips. And if you think about it today, like the wages for tip workers are like $2.13, like $2.50. So in most cases, these folks are still living off their tips. Real deal slave shit. And I never forget this story that Uncle Stash told me when he was growing up in the 1950s. So he's Canadian. Like, they have their own history of racism, but it wasn't none of the get down that it was in the Deep South during that time. So during that time, they would take a family trip. They would drive from Toronto down to Virginia. And it was this one place that used to always stop. And it was Piccadilly. Piccadilly Cafeteria. And he remember asking his dad, like, wait, I see this waterfowl that says color only. What does that mean? And his father's like, I'll tell you about it later. It's fucked up, I'll tell you about it later. Then they'll go to Piccadilly. And he was trying to get his tray to throw it in the trash. And a black man's like, nah, I got it for you, sir. Right? And that was so weird to him. And his father handed him some money, the black guy. And he was like, what? Why are you doing that? Like, why? This makes no sense. Because the get down was different in Toronto. But that's how them folks made their money, bro. Like, them folks was literally in there on some fetch and step type shit. And I'm not blaming the guys that do that. You do what you got to do to take care of your family. But they had them folks, like, sitting there waiting to take up white folks' trays. Black folks couldn't even eat in there back then, dog. It was literally, hey, boy, come get my food, and maybe I'll give you some money to feed your family. Offshoot, bro. Why are we still doing this? Why? Other countries do not do this, bro. If you go to Japan right now, and I can speak with a level of knowledge, guys, because I lived in Japan 12 years, so I won't hear nobody say, well, you don't do that. I know, guys. Okay? The humble flex. I done been to over 13 countries, guys. And we're the only country to do this dumbass shit of making a wage for tip workers. If you go to Japan and try to tip, they're going to get insulted. They're going to be like, no, hell no, what you doing? No. You don't pay me. The company pays me. And a lot of y'all saying right now, well, a lot of companies, these restaurants, they have low margin. If they pay a full wage, they'll go out of business and good on them. Yeah, do that then. If you can't pay your workers a full wage, then go out of business. It ain't for you. Too many goddamn food restaurants in the business anyway. Yeah, and it's also a double-edged sword. Another y'all saying, look, tipping would be okay. It makes them folks work hard. No, it doesn't, dude. Like, one of the main gripes I hear now in America is that food takes too long to get out and service sucks. And we got a tip society. So why don't we just stop tipping anyway? Also, a lot of that, man, is not on the servers. And so I used to work at Shoney's, right? When I was a high school student. I was doing extracurricular activities, but I was working at Shoney's. All right. When I was working at Shoney's, dude, a lot of stuff was out of my control. If the kitchen was backed up and they couldn't get to the orders, that made everybody else's orders back up and late. So now I got to go out there and explain to the customer who's paying my wage, subsidizing my wage, the company should be paying me, why his food late. So now I got to kind of dance a little soft shoe. Like, hey, guys, sorry. You know, my whole get around with that was, look, man, I started giving away free food. Like, look, guys, dessert's on me. Don't worry about it. Like, hell yeah. My managers get mad at me. Hey, man, where that strawberry pie come from? I'm like, I gave it to them. Why? Food was late. They hated me. But that was my whole get around. Look, man, drinks on me. I'm finna make these drinks free. Get what you want. You want one of these special cherry limeades? Bet. Because a lot of stuff's out of my control. But that shouldn't even be a factor, dude. Pay your folks. Pay them. At least pay a minimum wage, which ain't shit. But at least you could do is that. Which goes to another problem I have with the American tip system as it stands now. Bro, like, Starbucks, Lenny's, how dare you ask for goddamn tips, bro? How dare you? Like, dude, this is becoming a problem. Like, every little restaurant or mom and pop, any place you go to, chicken wing shop, hey, do you want a 10% tip for taking my order? Like, you've literally done nothing. You've taken my order and you went and did your goddamn job. Why am I paying you 10%? Why? Why, dude? It's just another way to milk money out of the customer, right? So I'm pretty sure Starbucks is paying all their baristas and their cashiers at least minimum wage. Why the hell am I tipping? Like, seriously, why? Do your goddamn job. Give me my goddamn coffee. You already charged me this exorbitant-ass price for this nasty-ass coffee, and now I got to give you 10% of that at Starbucks? I went to a sandwich shop yesterday. Subway, matter of fact. I went to Subway. Only thing open, guys, I know. Subway's trash. Really don't like it myself. The only thing open to time in the area. I went there that's like, hey, the machine's going to ask you a question. I'm like, do you want a tip? No. When I went to Atlanta, I went to a food hall. Every place was asking for a tip. I bought some beef jerky. Literally. I went over there to the shop, picked up the jerky I like, handed it to the cashier, paid for it, and it automatically put a tip on there. Automatically. Matter of fact, they worded it. They worded it funny. It was like, hey, do you want to opt out of giving a tip? A 10% tip. And I didn't read it properly. I hit no. And bam, they said, you know, I got 10% gratuity added to that. Right? Which is dumb as hell, man. Dumb as hell. Stop the tipping system in America. Pay your goddamn workers. And if you can't pay your workers, don't open up a business. Now, I will say, man, a lot of you guys are, you know, lazy as hell in the service industry, man. And the customer service skills are shitty. But that's a whole nother separate argument. Maybe you get better people and you start paying wages. I'm just saying. So let's outlaw this, man. I don't know who do you talk to, who do we get this crunk up to, but this needs to be a federal issue, man. Outlaw tipping. Pay these folks, bro. Like, dead ass. I remember sometimes when I was working at Shoney's, my paycheck would have nothing on it. Nothing. Legit nothing. Like, I would work because I was in school at the time. So I probably worked like 20, 25 hours a week. And sometimes my paycheck would be $15 to $0. And them folks wanted me to claim my tips. Good luck with that, dog. Have the nerve to say, claim your tips. We got to take taxes out on that. Whatever, dog. Federally, let's stop this archaic holdover from slavery issue of tipping. Stop it. Okay, so I live in the greater Memphis area. I am a Memphis native. I grew up here. Like, most of my adult life has been in Japan, but before that, I was living in the Memphis metropolitan area. This is where I'm from. This is what I know. And Memphis gets a bad rap. We get the rap for just being known for two things, bullets and barbecue. Great barbecue, but you might get shot going to get it. And I think that is unfairly thrown upon us. Well, let me just say, I know crime is a problem here. It is. I'm not hiding from that. There is a crime problem here, but that also belies the fact that there's a lot of potential here in Memphis too. Like, Memphis has a lot of potential. We're in a centralized location right in the middle of America. A lot of distribution going here. I think if we worked on our infrastructure, you can get like more films here and more things to go on here if you have the right people in charge. But only thing you hear is crime. Crime, crime, crime. It's bad. Crime, crime, crime. And like, once again, I'm not saying it's not bad, but Memphis right now has the potential to turn the corner, in my opinion. It really does. And we have a new Memphis mayor, Paul Young, who was recently elected and sworn in. I personally reserve praise and judgment to after you do something. Like, you got potential, but you got to show me something. That's just me. I don't go off the deep end praising anybody. You got to show me something. And if I'm being honest, I got a lot of questions about who this man people is. I don't know a lot about the man's background. And when it comes to crime in Memphis, to all Memphians, listen to the sound of my voice, I have to ask you, Who do you blame for the high crime rate? Whose fault is it? Crime is happening. Who do you blame for the crime rate being high? And look, man, all politics are local. Like, local politics makes a difference. They affect your life. But a lot of this is shared blame. Like, nobody wants to share the blame for the problems. They just want to shuffle it off and point fingers at everybody else. When there's enough shared blame to go around. And I ask that honestly because I think we go to the usual suspects and say, well, the police department's not doing their job. And since I've been here, I've heard, like, the typical argument that the reason why there's a crime problem is this is a democratically ran city. The Democrats are in charge, and that's why there's high crime rate. In any city that you have a Democrat leader, the crime rate is hard. It's high. That is some of people's rationale for this. Well, you vote Democrats in, you get high crime rate. You guys know that cities can't make laws? They can't. Look it up. A city cannot make a law. Laws come from the state level. So if your rationale for Memphis having high crime is because it's a democratically ran city from the Democrats, this is a red state. Laws come from on high, from the state level. It wasn't the city of Memphis that made it easier for people to get guns. That came down from the state. Dead ass. Yeah, leadership can be a Democrat. But a lot of the money in Memphis are Republicans. Like, who among you think that what Fred Smith say don't hold weight? Who among you think what the Memphis Chamber of Commerce say, who lean a majority Republican? Word doesn't matter. If you want to be honest, dog, a lot of the problems with the Memphis Police Department can be traced back to when Democratic leaders were taking suggestions from Republicans about how to run the police department like a business, and they implemented that dumbass 4.6 pay cut to police officers. Like, already you got these folks doing way too much, and then you're going to do a pay cut, and you wonder why Memphis doesn't have police officers. If I'm not mistaken, at one point in time, man, Collierville, Germantown, these little municipalities outside of Memphis, those police departments were making more than Memphis with a denser population and more crime. Like, yo, so you got folks on the outside of Memphis doing less work, getting more money, but the people you asking to deal with this quote-unquote crime wave are getting less. Make it make sense. The whole state government has to work together. So when it comes to crime, my question is, once again, who are you blaming? Now, I'm a firm believer, if the police mess up, you should hold the police accountable. However, I do feel like in Memphis, that people that try to shift the blame to the police department are a little short-sighted and just really trying to deflect from other things in the city being off. So my question to you is, what do you want the police to do? And when you say you want the police to do their job, what do you think their job is? Which leads to the obvious next question, who is accountable for them doing their job? Who is the person that you're going to look at? Who gets the blame? And the obvious answer is the police chief. The good old chief of police, which in Memphis right now is CJ Davis. That's the police chief. And right now, there's a fight for her to be reappointed. Now, here's the thing, guys. I'm not out here riding for the man. I'm not out here saying that I'm endorsing Miss Davis to be the police chief. She has flaws. I can't say that there's nothing she could have done better. It's my understanding that she's been the police chief for around 2 years, and there was rumors that she could not fire anybody because former Mayor Strickland didn't want her to ruffle feathers. I don't know if that's true or not, but that is the rumor. However, there are policy things she could have did to make Memphis better. If I'm not mistaken, there's a no pursue policy in Memphis, which means that cops can't pursue you if you take off. You need to change that. That is a policy change that you could make, right? However, I will say, I do see a lot of arrows being thrown her way by some people. I'm like, you asking about her job? What about your job? Like, what are you going to do? Most notably, the chairman of the Memphis City Council. This man been out here slinging arrows at Ms. Davis. I'm like, bro, I need to know your plan. What's homie name? Chairman J.B. Smiley Jr.? This man been out here on a tour saying he's not going to be a rubber stamp to appoint Ms. Davis because he has to ask the question, has crime went down? Do you feel like the crime is in control? And I'm like, brother man, what are you going to do? Like, if you're going to pose that question, you need to have like a plan out there. And if you have that, Mr. Smiley, cool. I need to see it. I searched your Facebook. I searched online. I couldn't find it. So please make it more visible if you do have it. But I need to know your plan, brother. Buddy, what is the Memphis City Council going to do? What ordinance are you going to pass to make crime better? Like, what are your suggestions? It's my understanding that the city has taken away the hiring process from the police department. Like, the city is over-hiring police. So once again, who's to blame? Because one thing I did see that the Memphis City Council did was give themselves health care for the rest of their lives. So one thing the city council is over, that you guys don't know, they're over the budget. They control the purse strings. So all this crappy infrastructure, I got questions to the city council. Hey, man, what you going to do to get these potholes fixed? And don't you think maybe before you give yourself health insurance for the rest of your life, maybe you should do something about these potholes first? Dead ass. Or is that your crime bill? Look, man, if we keep these streets super shitty, then criminals can't get away. Hey, maybe that's it. Seriously, man, the Memphis City Council passed the ordinance that gives them folks health insurance for the rest of their life. I'm sorry. They pay for the health insurance. Only 30% of it. But the other 70% is subsidized through tax dollars. So these folks can be on the city council for 5 years and then get health insurance for the rest of their life. I just hope you made that for the police department too. I just hope they can do that too. If you can get health insurance for the rest of your life, I'm hoping that the Memphis City Police Department, part of that deal was they get health insurance too for the rest of their life. So I'm just looking around Memphis like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? What do we want? Why are you asking Ms. Davis what she gonna do? Because once again, shared blame, buddy. Shared blame. And what you do need is consistency. Now, once again, I'm not out here riding for the man. And term limits are needed. But you got to remember, like, Ms. Davis was actually appointed under the last mayor, who was Strickland. And the rumors are that Strickland did not allow her to fire anybody. You're going to have to give her some time to see if she's going to put some more of her people in place and make some reforms. That's why I'm saying we need some consistency. Like, if I'm going to blame you, I need to know how much to blame you for. Dead ass. But one thing I can say about Ms. Davis that impressed me is, as we are at the year mark of the Tyree Nichols death and all those riots, all those protests, what made this one different was Ms. Davis actually addressed it. She didn't hide from it. She took decisive action, and that matters. Because once again, dog, can we have just an honest conversation right now? Just an honest, nuanced conversation. Excessive police force is wrong. Nobody likes excessive police force. But sometimes excessive force is needed when you're a police officer. Like in the case of Tyree Nichols, that Scorpion unit jumped out, beat that man's ass, killed him. That didn't warrant that. That did not warrant a beating. Now, you can make the argument he didn't comply, but non-compliance shouldn't have ended up in death in that situation, right? Now, contrast that to those officers in Uvalde when that madman came in with an AR-15 shooting all the little babies and the police just waited out there. Like, violence was necessary in that, at that point. But, like I keep telling y'all, in most cases, man, these police, a lot of them just scared. Like, they don't want to be in danger, right? So the people, as they really need to be kicking, they don't do it. Dylan Roof needed his ass kicked, bro. His ass didn't get kicked. Like, the guy around Memphis that was a serial killer, he should have got his ass kicked. Ass didn't get kicked. Didn't have no scratches when he went to the police department, dog, for various reasons. But if you're a police officer, like, nobody's saying that sometimes you don't have to use force. It's just the unwarranted use of force is what people are mad about. And when it happens, you got to call it out. However, Miss Davis did. That's why those protesters didn't ball over, because anytime black folks protest, people feel like, yeah, they're finna burn it down. I ain't never seen no black folks protest the Capitol or try to overthrow the U.S. government, but whatever. But that ain't the case. What black folks want and all people want is decisive action and make sure their voices are heard. Miss Davis did that. Now, and this is not an endorsement, but if the rumors were true, and I can see them being true, you got to think Miss Davis is an outsider coming from Atlanta, coming right to the police department, outside of firing everybody. It could ruffle some feathers. You got to think about it, man. A lot of these upper echelon people probably done been in the department 20, 30 years. Incompetent, but been there 20 or 30 years, and they're part of the community and part of these churches. If you go in there and fire everybody, it's going to look bad, right? It really does. The optics don't look good. But, like, who do you know that comes in from out of town and don't fire nobody? Like, seriously, who don't bring their own people? So if she does get a second term, like, this is the time to do it, to really make some reforms and make yourself heard, if that was the case. And as we hit the year anniversary of Tyrese Nichols' death, the main officers, we got to ask, like, who is responsible for them? Is it just the police department? No, it's not. And once again, we got to have shared blame. We got to ask the question, who was over hiring that police officer? It's, to my knowledge, he was a former jailer who hired him on the police department. It's also, to my knowledge, dude was kicking prisoners' ass in jail. But once again, the hiring process has been taken out the hands of the police department. So, can I blame them? Yes, but how much can I blame them? I also got to blame the city and the city council. It has to be shared blame here. You can't ask for top-notch employees and get these gutter basement prices, bro. And as a city council, dude, you should not be giving yourself anything, any kind of raise or any kind of benefit without getting the police department or the fire department they benefits first, bro. Dead ass. It just doesn't work. It doesn't look good. You got a part-time job. Most of you folks on city councils, man, y'all got dual income coming in for a part-time job. Now you got health care for life. Once again, I hope you did that for the fire department and the police department. But you can't do that and claim to be tough on crime if you ain't paying the police officers. Shared blame. We can't just point the fingers at them. And also, are we talking about the Scorpion unit? Who in their right mind would let, like, young cops be on a specialized unit? Where was the leadership on that? Like, that's something Miss Davis could have did. Even though you couldn't fire somebody, you could have made sure that it was, like, well-skilled officers with those young folks. Now, I know a lot of these cats were 30 and under. One of them was 24. But a lot of these cats are around 30. It ain't going to be right unless you got some old people out there, some good cops, showing them the way. That was always the recipe for disaster, bro. Now, here's the thing, man. I'm not saying that I have all the answers. But one thing I'm not going to do, I'm not going to overlook the problems in the place I live just to keep talking about national issues. So, like, I'm just telling everybody now, you're going to hear me talk a lot about Memphis issues because I'm living here. I see some problems. I see some flaws. And I think it's on me as a person, as a podcaster, as somebody who likes to get civically active, whatever I am, to try to make a change. Be more involved. Do something, dog. Not just talk about it. Do something. Like, one thing about me in Japan, anybody who knows me over there can tell you, dog, I was active. Like, any social issue that I thought was unjust or wrong, I was there. When it came to like pride parades, I was there. When it came to Black Lives Matter, I was there. Like I'm there, bro. I'm riding for rights. And it ain't gonna be no difference since I'm here in America, dog. So yeah, I see some problems in Memphis. I see some crime. I'm not gonna just talk about the problems. I'm gonna start trying to get some solutions to what I think should happen too in Memphis. So there it is. And that's the Common Knowledge Podcast, man. Updating this thing weekly, man. Stay tuned. And yo, share my podcast. I'm not saying I got all the answers. I'm not saying I got everything right, but discussion needs to happen. And dislike all my crap, guys. Dislike it all. I don't need your approval.